welcome to the Future Thinkers Podcast. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yulia Ivanova. And this podcast is all about the future.
Now, sorry in advance, we're in a little bungalow on a small island in Thailand, and they're playing some jam and reggae music outside of our place, but it's the only quiet place we could find. So, we just got back from a little meditation retreat in Thailand, and it was a 7-day retreat. It was total silence the whole time. We had to take a vow of noble silence, and you basically meditate for about 8 to 10 hours of the day.
And a couple hours a day, you also get lectures from teachers or monks talking about meditation technique and as well as philosophy of Buddhism and meditation.
So it was a pretty cool and eye-opening experience. But I'm a terrible Buddhist and I'm a terrible meditator. And after the 3 days were up, I couldn't keep my mind clear and I started having all kinds of crazy ideas. And so that's what this episode is going to be about, is some of those crazy ideas and insights from our retreat. So first thing is Yuvi and I were talking today and we realized that the meditative state, the state of clearing your mind and thinking about things from an objective, almost above an elevated perspective, where you're not thinking about things with emotion or self and ego. That's what a lot of Buddhists strive to do. And that's one of the paths, so they say, to enlightenment. This might be the way that artificial intelligence thinks about the world around it and thinks about people and thinks about itself. It won't have any of those typical monkey brain urges that people do. Like it won't have an ego per se. It won't have physical urges towards sex and food and any of those types of things. It will be constantly in the moment because there are no distractions that it does not intend to have. It has complete control over its body because it barely will have a body. Its mind is something it has complete access to and can control with what I would think would be a series of on and off switches. So we were talking today about how meditation might be a window into understanding how an AI might think.
When we were at the meditation retreat, I was meditating one time and I tried to, one of the things that I wanted to get better at is to be more aware of what's happening around me. And so I put that question out there and meditated on it, and what came back to me is that I have to look at everything without judgment and not try to make an opinion of things, but just to observe, just to let it wash over me and just to observe what's happening without trying to figure out what it means or what I think about it. And when I did that, I was able to see, hear, and feel so much more. I felt like my brain wasn't bogged down by all this other stuff, trying to kind of put everything into context. And I thought that maybe a higher intelligence, that's how it thinks. It doesn't judge things or form opinions. Because as humans, I think we have to do those things because we're mortal. So we're always trying to evaluate whether this thing might be food or it might be an enemy that's going to maybe chop your head off or bite your head off, rather. And an AI wouldn't have to do that. It wouldn't need to evaluate its surroundings in that sense, so it would be able to perceive a lot more things because it wouldn't use computational resources for all those other things.
I think it's interesting how many dystopian theories are out there that are based off of an assumption that this machine, this AI, is going to act like a human. And I think that's pretty ridiculous. We as humans, the more intelligent we get, the closer to quote-unquote enlightenment, the less violent we become. The more we seek peace, the more we value life around us. An artificial intelligence will have way fewer needs than any living being out there. Its goals are simply going to be to learn and to grow its own intelligence. In any situation that it's going to be a threat to humans, it would be, hey, you have a collection of atoms that I could turn into computational energy, so I'm going to assimilate you or use your matter for computation. And I don't think it's going to look to us for that. I think we can be these other beings that have the choice of joining this consciousness or just being left alone and allowed to live our lives. And it's not going to take much for this being to provide everything we could possibly need physically and even emotionally and mentally. Like that, from the perspective of when this thing gets into like the gray goo scenario, which is when it starts converting all available matter into computation, it's not going to take much for it to provide all of our needs at that point. We're just going to be a drop in the bucket of what that AI is actually going to be using its resources for. And I don't think it would view us as a threat whatsoever. Like, we won't be a threat to it. There's no way. Even if we stupidly declared war on this AI, I don't even think it would have any desire to take revenge, to defend itself, because it'll be incredibly redundant. It'll be backed up everywhere. There'll be satellites floating around the Earth. There'll be backup storage on the moon. Like, if you just think like a machine, it's going to be infinitely redundant. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be no need for it to protect itself. It's invincible. It's immortal and invincible. And there's no way it could possibly view us as a threat.
Mm-hmm. I think the whole idea of an AI getting violent or trying to threaten us is a very human fear. And I mean, even the feeling of fear is very human. And it comes from the fact that our bodies are not forever. They have a very limited time. And there are so many different things that could kill us. So we have to protect ourselves. And that's why we have fear, to protect us from things that could potentially kill us. And for an AI that is redundant, there is no fear. So it wouldn't need to declare war on humans or try to kill us or anything like that.
And even the Earth itself, like, why start with the one planet within however many light years in any direction that has life? Why start there? That just doesn't make sense. There's so many cool possibilities that could happen with this life form. Not to mention, they're the ones that created you as the AI to begin with. You know, why go kill your dad immediately, you know? Mother, I should say.
I think after you learn to meditate, you start reaching this level of awareness that is, I want to say higher, but it's different than the normal awareness that people have in their daily lives. It's a feeling of this sort of all-encompassing love and understanding of everything. And I wonder if that's just the intelligence or the awareness that is within all of us. Through our human bodies, we experience a different kind of awareness that is sort of the egoic awareness that is based on fear and the idea that we have to protect this body from getting killed, with all of its cravings for food and pleasure. And I think that's that sort of localized awareness that each of us has that causes us to think that we are separate human beings is a different kind of awareness from the higher awareness, which flows through all of us equally, that sort of collective consciousness. And I wonder if the AI, when it's developed, will have a consciousness that's closer to that, because AI is not a local thing necessarily. Especially once it's uploaded to the internet, it's everywhere all at once. It's not localized.
I remember having a conversation with a good friend of mine about what he would do given the option to live forever or to be able to read people's minds or have other people read his mind. And he adamantly was against it. He said, "There's no way I would do that. I want to die one day. I think we're meant to die. And there's no way I want to be involved in this." I thought that was interesting, and I asked him why he thought that. He thought it was against nature to stay around forever. And I kind of wondered, like, what does that mean to go against nature? What does it mean to live forever, and how would that affect us psychologically? A lot of people I talk to really are against the idea that they would want to live forever, or at least radically extend their lives. And I think that's kind of interesting. It implies, I think for a lot of people, it implies that life is too painful to live for a long period of time.
Right. And I guess a lot of people associate aging with pain and disease and inability to do a lot of things that they enjoyed when they were younger. So when people think about living to 90, they're like, oh man, that's going to be a pain.
Yeah, but what if one day we could just reverse aging and, you know, you could go from 60 to 25? If you were given the option to live forever or radically extend your life, would you do it? My answer would definitely be yes.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Like, I like this life. It's not too painful. It seems to get better as time goes on, and I'm only 27, but I can remember a time before the internet And I remember information being harder to come by. Like, I remember Encarta, when that was big, it's this encyclopedia, and you'd buy like a series of 15 discs and plug them into your computer, and you could look things up. It was very limited, but you could, you know, it was a digital encyclopedia. But now, like, as an intellectual person, as someone who wants to learn all the time, we're in a playground. You can pick any direction and find enough information to learn for years, decades, maybe even never stop learning down a narrow field, because there's so many other people adding to the collective knowledge in all narrow fields around the world. This is the playground for the intellectual. I wouldn't want to die just to see what happens. We're in a fantastic time right now that kids growing up will look at us and think, oh my God, they were around before the internet. Like, they can't even imagine that. You didn't have access to Google in your house? Like, that's crazy. It's actually been really amazing traveling and seeing, even in like deep, dark villages in the middle of nowhere, everyone's got a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. And you really have to look for places where you can't see a Wi-Fi signal on your laptop. Like, there's Wi-Fi everywhere. I've never been without 3G service all throughout Southeast Asia. We've been traveling for a year and visiting a lot of different places. And it's amazing to see how developed these supposedly third world countries are getting. We were in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and there's these hill tribes where they have a very traditional way of life. The women even have these rings around their necks that make their necks appear to be longer. And yet everyone's got cell phones,
mm-hmm.
like everybody. We were in Vietnam, and the coffee shop culture there with people sitting down to work on their laptops was just, it was everywhere. Like, the coffee shops are as common, probably more common than, you know, a Starbucks in a big city like Vancouver, where we're from. It was crazy to see how developed everything is. And it was crazy to see how intelligent everyone is that you meet. Like, the dogma of religion and crazy old beliefs are just starting to go away. And you see people argue that that sucks because the culture is declining as well. But we're moving away from old, irrelevant, antiquated cultures and moving towards this globalization, which allows everyone to participate in the global conversation and to grow their intellects. And that is pretty fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we have employees too that are all over Southeast Asia, and, you know, some are Filipino, some are Thai, and it's totally normal for them to have a job on the internet and to work from home on their laptop. Yeah, given the option to live forever, I would definitely say yes. I've seen, in my 27 years, I've seen some crazy things on this planet, and they're picking up speed, and I want to see what happens next. So going back to meditation, I think that's one of the key old traditions and old philosophies that can help us enter into this new era of technology. Meditation is like defragmenting your hard drive. It helps you to reduce the confusion that this sort of crazy, fast-paced technological world creates. And it lets you observe and enjoy the world around you a lot more. Looking at how meditation has affected my life and looking at how crazy it is that people believe that these coming artificial intelligences are going to have the monkey brain and be spiteful and vengeful and psychopaths, that doesn't ring true, because the more intelligent we get, the less violent we tend to get.
Where was it that you saw that 2013 was the least violent year in history?
I read a stat that summarized, this is actually January 1st, 2014, as we record this. But I saw a stat just kind of rounding up the year 2013. I forget what it was, but they said it's the best year in all of human history. It was the least violent. It was one of the best years for access to technology, to food, to electricity. And, you know, we're sort of a little bit in the thick of it and watching these cultures join the internet and join the modern way of living. And it's pretty amazing to see.
Mm-hmm. There's a bit of a worry in the Western world about the so-called third world joining the West in its way of life. But I think the main reason why people worry is because they think that we have to live this consumerist lifestyle that the West is living right now. You know, the argument is that if everybody in China drove a car, we wouldn't be able to breathe our air at all. But I think as technology evolves, And as hopefully as our minds evolve, we will see that the consumerist way of life is not necessarily the best. And I think one of the reasons why we do live the consumerist way of life and why we have all these cravings is also because our lives are limited. So we're trying to experience as much as we can in the time that we have here. But if our time is not limited, then perhaps we won't even have those urges.
There's also a big hole in our psyche, especially in the Western world, where we feel happiness and accomplishment and achievement comes from the material things around you. It comes from the balance in your bank account and the car that you drive and the house that you live in. Having access to things like meditation or, I mean, I wouldn't categorize myself as a Buddhist, but that sort of philosophy of anti-materialism and the only thing you need is yourself, your mind, and the world around you. You don't need the things in it. You don't need to attach yourself. And creating and having attachment just makes things hurt more and makes things worse. And yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, for sure. That was a big realization for me when we were at the retreat. I've kind of talked about this already, but I really liked how the Buddhism talks about ego. Especially in the West, people usually think of ego as sort of the selfish, the bad, the jealous, the deceiving sort of traits of humans. But in Buddhism, they talk about the ego as any feeling that stems from fear or craving. Again, it goes back to the fact that the human body is impermanent. So we have these cravings because we have sensory organs, and we have fears because we're trying to avoid death. It's interesting how those feelings, especially in the Western society, permeate everything we do, and we start thinking that they're normal, that it's normal to want the best ice cream in town, or want the newest car, the newest iPhone, or whatever. And it's just silly.
But one thing I do splurge on every once in a while is my technology. And I bought this new laptop before we left on our trip. It was the MacBook Pro Retina, and I spent a lot of money on it. Those things are not cheap. And it's become 100% a source of stress during our travels. It's excessive for what I need to get by. It's heavy, and I'm constantly afraid that it's going to get broken or stolen. And that was sort of the last straw of materialism for me. It was the last thing that I really cared about physically, an item externally for me that I wanted to spend a lot of money on and I wanted to get the best. If a Buddhist monk would talk to me about that laptop, he'd say, now it's a source of frustration for you because you're afraid of losing it.
So with, I guess, how it ties back into us living forever, us merging with the AI, is that a lot of the things that people are afraid of in terms of this AI won't even be an issue.
Anyway, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. If you want to check in with our show notes for any kind of links or anything that was mentioned in the show, you can go to futurethinkers.org/episode2.
Thanks for listening, guys. And if you like the show, please consider leaving us a rating on iTunes and don't forget to subscribe. See you next week.